watches I ride in this wind. On my good horse I call you my shiny black bears. To the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Finner Syracuse, or WXXE Truxton. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. Today we'll conclude our series on anarchism by focusing on anarchist discussions on the Good Society. First, though, we're going to bring you an important press conference from last Thursday on a new report released by NYPIRG, which reveals the extent to which experimental genetically modified crops have been foisted upon an unwitting populace. The speakers at the conference addressed the impacts on health, science, and the ecosystem, as well as the destruction of family farms that make up New York State's thriving organic farming industry.
Hard-working man I oppress. So take your pace easy, go home soon like lightning.
NYPIRG, which stands for New York Public Interest Research Group, is a nonprofit watchdog. They released a report this month titled Raising Risk: Field Testing of Genetically Engineered Crops in the U.S. Last Thursday, a coalition of groups opposed to GMO agriculture gave a press conference in Syracuse. Sadly, aside from us, few press were there. One question you might ask your media outlets is why they are not bringing you any sort of debate on a practice that affects human health, the environment, and the livelihoods of family farmers who grow organic food here in the Finger Lakes. At the end of the press conference, which is slightly more than half an hour, we'll give you some contact information for the groups issuing the report, as well as where you can read the 89-page report for yourself. Then you'll be in a position to ask your local newspaper why they don't think this is news worth covering.
Welcome, everyone, to the Genetic Engineering Food Alert press conference. My name is Tony Del Plato. I'm the Ithaca Area Coordinator of the Safe Food Campaign Organic Consumers Association. And I have a number of speakers here today, and we are today releasing a report called Raising Risk. This report was put together by the United States Public Interest Research Groups, and we have the New York State PIRG representative here in Syracuse who will speak to this report, as well as some of the other concerns that we have. First, we have Teresa Kasiak. She's a community outreach director for NYPIRG. We have Dr. Jennifer Daniels, who is the Green Party mayoral candidate here in Syracuse. She's a physician and an expert in organic foods and healing. We have Lou Johns, who is an organic farmer for the past 20 years here in central New York. We also have Anne Marie Mayer. She is a PhD candidate in nutrition. And we have Frida Jock, a member of the Onondaga Nation. The first thing about raising risk is that we're questioning the testing of GE crops in the United States. According to this report, nearly 29,000 test sites exist around the United States. There are 200 of those test sites here in New York State. Because of the risk, the lack of testing, the lack of the accumulation of data, the lack of labeling, we are calling for an immediate moratorium on the commercialization of all genetically engineered foods. We want a moratorium until safety testing is done, independent safety testing, independent of the corporations like Monsanto and Dow. We want real labeling of products that contain genetically modified organisms. We also want alternatives to expensive, high-tech agricultural technologies like genetic engineering. And lastly, one of our primary concerns over this whole debate is the issue of substantial equivalence. Some scientists and policymakers and corporations are saying that they believe that genetically engineered foods are substantially equivalent to conventionally or organically raised foods. We do not accept this concept. Substantial equivalence was created at the end of the Bush administration, the Elder Bush administration, as a means of avoiding FDA testing and labeling requirements. Essentially, Elder Bush broke the law. The subsequent president, Clinton, continued with the charade and breaking of the law of the land, and that is the testing of all substances that contain other organisms. According to this report and our own observation, the USDA and FDA have failed to oversee genetically engineered experiments. They've also failed to give notice to the public that these experiments are taking place in their own communities. The National Institutes of Health and the Government Accounting Organization criticized the policies and regulatory shortcomings of both of those agencies, both stating that the science is not being done and that we're taking grave risk by continuing this scientific research. We're concerned that USDA and FDA have failed in facing the fact that big money is the overriding factor in the kind of scientific and public interest research concerns that we have here. At this time, 65% of all field tests are considered confidential business information. That means that they are using corporate and patent law to prevent us from knowing what is going on in our communities. In essence, genetically modified organisms in our food and in our on our farms is turning us all into guinea pigs. And we're not the only guinea pigs, because we look at the biodiversity around us and all of us are being tested and manipulated, mostly without our knowledge. At this time, I'd like to introduce Teresa Kasiak of NYPIRG to discuss the study, Raising Risk, and give her statement.
Hello. My name is Teresa Kasiak. I represent the New York Public Interest Research Group. This report documents how the USDA rubber stamps thousands of field tests of genetically engineered crops every year with little or no oversight. And despite this massive experiment, we still don't have answers to basic health and safety questions about genetically engineered crops. These field tests are not taking place in a framework to assess their ecological impacts. Their purpose is to see whether the plant lives or dies and whether it can be commercially viable. NYPIRG is concerned about the rapid entry of genetically engineered crops into the marketplace. With increasing frequency, genetically engineered crops and foods have been showing up in products and places where they're not supposed to. The most widely publicized example of this was when taco shells were found to contain Starlink, which was a variety of genetically engineered corn that had not been approved for human consumption. And this contamination happened through mixing in grain elevators and through cross-pollination with other varieties, sometimes miles away. Recently, in Canada, a farmer was sued by Monsanto because his canola crop was contaminated with genetically engineered canola that either blew from a neighboring field or a seed that fell off a truck. As these examples show, both field testing and the commercialization of improperly tested crops pose serious potential hazards to our environment and our food supply, as well as serious economic risks to organic and conventional farmers. Questions about the long-term safety of these crops, their impact on the soil, non-target species like the monarch butterfly, and their ability to create new viruses are all largely ignored under the current system. Further, lack of testing extends beyond the environmental impacts to potential health risks. Through pollen drift, we could contaminate our food supply with unknown implications for human health. Our environment is being used as a laboratory for widespread experimentation on genetically engineered organisms. We're alarmed about the rush to market genetically engineered crops without proper testing and safeguards in place. NYPIRG is calling on the state legislature to pass a five-year moratorium on the commercial planting and growing of genetically modified crops in New York in order to fully evaluate the impacts of this new technology on our health, the economy, and the environment. And we urge Senator Nancy Lorraine Hoffman, who chairs the Agriculture Committee, to move Senate Bill 3016 through her committee and onto the Senate floor for a vote as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Next, I'd like to introduce Frida Jock, a citizen of the Onondaga Nation.
Thank you. My statement is from myself. I'm representing myself in this. It would seem that society would be aware by now of how delicate our environment is and take this into account in their business endeavors. Isn't it obvious that playing with the very balance of the natural world has caused a great deal of harm and that caution is best when dealing with the natural world? Look at the damage that occurred when the St. Lawrence Seaway was pushed in as a wonder of engineering science. It allowed enormous amounts of development that used the Great Lakes as a dumping ground. We are also seeing creatures that have a safe and harmonious home in Europe and elsewhere, living in the Great Lakes and now in the Finger Lakes, causing havoc because they have been transplanted by ships that traverse these waters. This is an example of science and development moving ahead without serious foresight, forethought of the effects of their efforts. Genetic engineering involves man's manipulation of the very building blocks of life, so it is truly the most dangerous of man's capitalistic endeavors so far. How can man foresee the problems that could occur? Breaking the code of DNA in no way involves the understanding of how these building blocks of life interact with each other. I fear for all life on Mother Earth when man begins to think he can act as creator. Thank you.
Thank you, Frieda. Our next speaker is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. She's a physician and the Syracuse mayoral candidate, an expert in organic foods and healing.
Hello, my name is Dr. Daniels, and today I'm representing myself as a physician. I'm also a concerned citizen and a mayoral candidate. I have a 10-year history of treating patients and watching them heal by simply removing herbicides, pesticides, and food additives from their diet. All of these chemicals, which are known to be damaging, are manufactured by the very same companies who now propose to genetically engineer our foods. By further adulterating our foods at the seed level and refusing to label them, this creates a situation where our citizens are not in a position where they can choose health. And patients with conditions as different as rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, diabetes, hypertension, and arthritis have improved by simply eating foods that are not contaminated. The method of growing these products, where the pollen can freely blow from one field to another, creates a system of cross-contamination where our chances of having any food that's free from contamination is simply wiped out. For these reasons, I think it is imperative that Senator Hoffman clear this bill from committee so it can be released and so Syracuse and New York State citizens can choose health. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels. Our next speaker will be Anne Marie Mayer, who is a PhD candidate in nutrition at Cornell University.
Hello. And I'm speaking really as an individual who's concerned about this technology and as a scientist. I'm a scientist in nutrition and also soil science. I do cross-disciplinary research. And the issue that's really of concern to me about genetic engineering is that we have a technology which we know very little about. We can't predict what's going to happen. And yet at the same time, it can leave irreversible effects in the environment. So these two things in combination, I think, are very dangerous. So I think there are really three aspects that worry me. One is the individual health aspect. Another is the effects on the environment. And then the broad issue about the effects on society as a whole. So if we talk about our individual health, it's very difficult to make a statement. There have been no tests, no long-term tests for human safety. People say that we're guinea pigs. In scientific experiments, you have some guinea pigs on one treatment, some guinea pigs on another treatment, and then you see what is the difference. We're not guinea pigs because everybody's being given the same treatment, and we don't know how much anybody's getting, so we can't tell the effects. We certainly can't tell the long-term effects. I worry about antibiotic-resistant markers. I worry about what might happen when these are mixed with antibiotics. We don't know. Okay, we have 89,000 test sites around the country, at least 89,000, but we have no human testing. We have 89,000 test sites around the country, but we're not testing for the things in the environment that we need to find out. We're not finding out what are the long-term effects in the soil. It's difficult to do that with the science that we have. We know how to look for the things we're looking for. We don't know how to look for the side effects. So we don't really know what's going to happen to the millions of acres that have been planted up around the US, let alone the 89,000 test sites with unknown genes. 29,000. So the other thing that concerns me is the effects on the wider society. There's a concentration of power here. So much money going into this particular technology, very little into the alternatives. And I think there are alternatives that can help us solve some of the problems that we face. So I would agree we need, at the very least, labelling of genetically modified foods. And I would also call for a moratorium before we know as much as we can about this technology and its wider effects.
Both GMO test sites as well as farming for commercialization threaten the environment, our food supply, and conventional and organic farmers as well. We need the independent safety test to determine what the unintended effects may be, to determine the risks that we face. We need to develop standards for measuring these risks and determining future courses of action. Because of the threats to the food supply, without these tests, it'll be difficult to say whether genetic engineering of food and seeds is in fact in the best interest of society. And lastly, one of the important things I think we need to consider is alternatives to genetic engineering. There are cheaper, safer, and more accessible ways of growing food. And the myth that genetic engineering will solve the problem of hunger in the world has been totally repudiated by anyone who knows anything about the issues. I'd like to introduce a farmer. His name is Lou Johns. He's been an organic farmer in central New York for 20 years. And Lou's going to tell us what it means to farm and organically and the threats that he faces.
Thanks. And I would like to thank the organization NYPERG for compiling the study that they've put together and released today. It's a helpful piece of information for the public. And some thanks to Tony Del Plato for his work as an organizer around this issue. The concerns that I have as an organic grower are obviously many, but one of my biggest concerns is the fact that this technology, biotechnology, is extracting millions, if not billions, of dollars worth of research money, research staff time, land, production research, away from alternatives such like organic farming that, as a practitioner of in the industry for 20 years, I'm a representative of a group of farmers who've been creating for themselves and the public a viable alternative to conventional production, and now probably the only alternative to the contaminants from biotechnology. Just a few little bits of information that concern me is across the United States, there's 885,000 acres devoted to research at federally funded state universities. And of that, over 800,000 acres of research land, less than 2%, or less than 0.02%, or 151 acres, is currently devoted to organic production. So you can see with just the lack of concern and research efforts being put towards organic and other alternatives, the possibility of the public or actual farmers having access to viable information to create alternatives just doesn't exist in our in this country. And sort of to juxtapose that, across the world and primarily in third world countries, there's research going on every day at prominent research facilities in Africa where sound alternative practices are being discovered that are allowing indigenous small-scale farmers the opportunity to triple, sometimes sevenfold increases in their production of basic commodities that their communities need, and also allowing them to eliminate the use of herbicides and pesticides in their fields. So in other parts of the world, there are research facilities dedicating time and money towards finding simple, viable, clean alternatives. And in our country, were being given in biotechnology as sort of the only alternative that we have. I guess the other thing that concerns me is that we need to remember that even if we eliminate biotechnology from current agricultural practices, we're still going to be left with conventional chemical agriculture as the alternative. So at this point, your only option for buying and consuming clean food products is to make the choice to purchase organic products, and I would encourage you to do it at a local level rather than on a national level. So appreciate the time. Thanks.
I'm going to make a few more comments and discuss the report for a few minutes, and then we're going to open it up. If anyone in the audience has any questions for anyone who has spoken, or if any of the people who have given statements want to make any additional statements, please feel free to step forward. Last Sunday, in the New York Times, there was a report stating that GMOs are so ubiquitous, it's all over the place, that it would be impossible to find totally pure foods. And, of course, if you're eating processed foods that contain soy, corn, potatoes, cotton, then there's a good chance, there's 7 in 10 chance that you're eating genetically modified organisms. Today in New York State, there are approximately 17 crops that are grown and tested. And some of these crops include Monsanto's trademark Roundup Ready corn and soybeans, and also BT corn. The report itself goes into quite a bit of details about the number of field releases and field sites, the institutions that are requesting permits. Here in New York State, Cornell gets the lion's share of permits and money. There is information about the frequency of permit denials, but those permit denials are based on not scientific facts, but whether an application has been filled out completely. As I mentioned earlier, there's confidential business information which allows the land-grant colleges, public institutions, to not be open to the freedom of information legislation, as well as the right of neighbors to know what is being grown. The report talks about the overview of the methodologies and the simple fact that since 1987, between 1987 and 2000, the year 2000, these test sites were to accumulate data to make informed decisions about whether to proceed, and little to no data has actually been accumulated. The risk associated with field testing is in the report. There's a damning analysis of the USDA oversight. As I mentioned earlier, the Elder Bush had pretty much taken the power away from the FDA and USDA to make those kind of decisions. And the conclusions and recommendations at this point is that we need to stop genetically modified foods in New York and around the world. Right now, in both the New York State Senate and the New York State Assembly, there are two bills for a five-year moratorium. The Senate Bill 3016 is sponsored by Senator LaValle, and in the Assembly, Assemblyman McEnany is sponsoring Assembly Bill 5741. As of this writing, both bills are stalled in their respective agricultural committees, and they need our pressure to keep them moving. Now, here in this office, we have behind us, we have Senator Nancy Hoffman, who has not been sympathetic to our concerns about the moratorium and the safety issues. Besides the moratorium on the creation of new commercial products, we want dairy products that are treated with RBGH, the bovine growth hormone, which is an early genetically modified organism. We want those products to be labeled. And that's another McEnany bill, Assembly Bill 3586. We urge everyone to contact their representatives. Let them know that you want this moratorium to go into effect as soon as possible, especially since we know this information as it exists. The New York Times writer said that there's no way to turn it back. The genie is out of the bottle. That's unacceptable. No matter how much has been released, we don't need more of these genetically modified organisms in the environment. The fact of the matter is, one of the scientists interviewed in this article said it could take decades to eradicate GMOs. Well, our concern is not just for the decade, not just for the century. We're talking about the importance of food and a safe food supply for the generations. What we do today will affect the generations. One last thing I'd like to comment about the corporate attitude toward our concerns. In the New York Times article, Andrew Cash, which is a biotech advocacy organization, says, quote, "Beggars cannot be choosy." And he says this referring to the dominance of U.S. corporate agriculture. And so we need to move the New York State legislators to get the bills out of committee for full discussion in the Senate Assembly and for full public discussion. We need a public debate and we need to vote. What people can do right now is call your legislators, support the moratorium, and we can vote with our forks. We choose what to eat. If you're concerned about GMOs, ask all of your food stores, your managers, to see to it that labels are put on to all genetically modified products that contain genetically modified organisms. I'd like to give you Jennifer Daniels again, who has some further comments, and then we'll take questions.
I mentioned before that the very same companies that make food additives, pesticides, and herbicides, which are known to cause human disease, also propose genetically modify our foods. But what I did not say is they also manufacture our pharmaceutical agents as well. So there appears to be a conflict of interest here in this vertically integrated structure and what appears to be a monopoly on all the chemicals in our lives, which appear to be conspiring to create illness and disease, which then necessitates a need for more chemicals made by these very same companies, these chemicals such as pharmaceutical drugs. And these pharmaceutical drugs are responsible, we now know, when properly prescribed, for over 100,000 deaths per year in the United States. So it seems to me especially critical that this moratorium be passed for the health of our citizens. Also in New York State and in my practice alone, I've noticed a tremendous increase in these autoimmune diseases, which appear to be caused and aggravated by these chemicals. So I would ask that our political leaders stop this and vote for the moratorium. Also, there's a Geneva Experimental Station, which is receiving government funding that needs to be decreased. And contacting Silver, Bruno, and Pataki would be helpful in urging them to drop this funding from their budget. Thank you.
Any further comments from people who had made presentations? Anyone from the audience have a question? Yes.
I wanted to just follow up on what Dr. Daniels said about the Geneva Experiment Station. I was wondering if the study showed anything about the experimentation is being done there. So there are open tests going on there. And I also wanted to know whether the moratorium would have an exemption for experimental plantings of GM organisms. Does anyone know?
I can't answer you specifically about whether there are studies and trials going on there specifically, but what I can tell you is that the Geneva Experiment Station was one of the very first sites, I think, in the United States, if not in the Northeast, for the release of one of the first genetically altered organisms. So, and I think with some certainty I can tell you there are study sites at the Geneva Experiment Station currently, along with at Cornell experiment farms there.
Could you maybe say something about Cornell's plans to expand the Geneva Station to include the Geneva Biotech Park? Do you know anything about that? Does anyone?
Okay. Yes, about Cornell research and accessibility to that information, as well as the biotech station in Geneva. Jeremy Alderson, a radio commentator, recently filed a Freedom of Information lawsuit against Cornell, requesting that information on their research be made available to the public. Cornell refused to give that information, and through the lawsuit, I'm very happy to say that Jeremy's suit has been upheld by the first New York State judge, and right now we're awaiting Cornell's response. They will more than likely appeal. But one of our major concerns is that through the land-grant colleges and the public institutions, Cornell is attempting to use its corporate legal strategy to prevent the public from knowing what is going on. What's the secret? What's the problem with letting your neighbors know what is being grown? Why are they not telling us the risk? Why are they not telling us the potential problems? And I think all of this makes us very, very suspicious about what the intent of Cornell is. Do we want science in the public interest, or is it become the ownership and in the domain of the corporate world? I think that this issue is as fundamental as the safety of these products. On the one hand, the industry and government advocates are saying that genetically engineered foods are substantially equivalent to conventional and organic foods. Well, we're saying that if they want to patent this information, and in the process of patenting, saying that it's really significantly different, what are they telling us? It sounds like double talk. On the one hand, it's substantially the same, and on another, it's different enough to patent. So what's happening at Geneva, at the Geneva biotech station that's been proposed is very questionable as to the honesty and integrity of what Cornell is doing.
I'm wondering if we could get some more details about the report and about what kinds of crops have been it was discovered that had been planted, what kinds of tests that have been done.
I have a summary of the New York State facts according to the report. New York ranks 34th in the country for the number of field tests by state, and 209 field tests were conducted in New York between 1987 and 2000. And the USDA issued 151 permits for field releases in New York. And 38% of the permits issued for New York were given to four research institutions. Cornell, which got 32, New York State Experimental Station, 15, SUNY Albany, 6, and SUNY Geneseo. And the report doesn't give any more specific info on the test. There wasn't any. And 17 different crops have been field tested in New York. The most commonly tested are potato and corn. Also really common are tomato, grape, melon, apple, and squash. Some of the more unusual crops were petunia, poplar, and papaya. And an estimated 1,937 acres have been used for experimental field tests in New York State between 1987 and 2000. And 36% of the permit applications did not include information about the acreage.
And at this time, on this beautiful afternoon here in central New York, it's just about high noon. I want to thank everyone and the press for joining us for the release of this important study, Raising Risk. And we hope that the information is widely disseminated. Again, we encourage everybody, contact your legislators, educate yourself, demand that our food be labeled, and demand that it be treated in such a way that the safety and integrity of the food is protected. Thank you very much.
You were just listening to a press conference which took place last Thursday announcing a new report, Raising Risk, Field Testing of Genetically Engineered Crops in the U.S. To read the full report online, visit www.gefoodalert.org. That's gefoodalert.org. The front page of the site is an online letter which you can automatically send to government and corporate leaders, which calls for the labeling of foods containing GMOs. To read the report, as well as other informative articles, click on the link for Press Room. The site will also tell you the various ways you can volunteer to get involved. For that, click on the link Campaign Central, which also has a brief tutorial on the issue of genetically engineered foods. Locally, you can get involved by contacting Tony Del Plato at the Ithaca Area Safe Food Campaign at area code 607-257-2520. That's 607-257-2520. We'll post this information to the Unwelcome Guest website as well at www.radioforall.org/unwelcome. The biotechnology industry wants to build a biotech park at the Geneva Ag Station, which would be doing nonstop field testing of GMOs. Tell your state assembly member and senator that this is a no-go. Help save the Finger Lakes from being the biotech industry's guinea pig and save our organic farms and gardens. The biotechnology industry is using every imaginable means to foist their products on us, even hiring psychologists to study the right words to use to manipulate us. The October 2000 edition of PR Watch carried an article of how the biotech industry is spinning the public. Here's an excerpt from Liquid Truth, Advice from the Spinmeisters. In 1992, the food industry's International Food Information Council, IFIC, retained Dr. G. Clotaire Rapaille, an international market research expert, to research how Americans relate to food biotechnology and genetic engineering. IFIC, an ardent enthusiast for the use of biotechnology in agriculture, wanted to know how it could overcome consumer apprehensions about the new technology. A, quote, core team was assembled to aid in the research, consisting of representatives from the Monsanto Agricultural Company, NutraSweet, Kraft General Foods, Ajinomoto, DuPont, and Calgene. Other research sponsors included Frito-Lay, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Procter & Gamble, and the M&M Mars Candy Company. The goal of the research team was to, quote, develop actionable strategies, messages, and language that will express information positively about the process and products without stirring fears or negative connotations, close quote. Dr. Rapaille is a Jungian psychologist who uses a technique that he calls archetype studies, which claims to delve into the, quote, primordial cause for opinions, attitudes, or motivations, unquote. As his report to IFIC explained, for each element in the world, there is a first meaningful experience called the imprinting moment. The archetype is the pattern which underlies this imprinting moment. The archetype is completely preordained by the culture, and it is common to everyone in a given culture. The archetype is the logic of emotion that forms the collective unconscious. Close quote. Discover these archetypes, Rapaille's theory promised, and you can read the consumers like a book, and you can understand their unconscious logic. Rapaille's process for uncovering archetypes was similar in most respects to what another advertising or PR person might term a focus group, but Rapaille liked to refer to them as imprinting groups. Each group consisted of 20 to 30 everyday Americans, which Rapaille's team of archetypologists led through a series of, quote, relaxation exercises and visualization aimed at eliciting their innermost feelings about biotechnology. The result of these exercises, the team concluded, was that the biotech industry stood at a crossroads. In one case, we have tremendous public support. We can be viewed as farmers bringing new varieties and improved foods to consumers. But if we do not position ourselves and our products correctly, we can just as easily be viewed in the same class as Hitler and Frankenstein. Close quote. The difference depended on which imprint provided the archetype for public perception of the new foods, and the public would choose its archetype based largely on the food industry's choice of words. Quote, in communicating about food biotechnology and genetic engineering, we now know a variety of trigger words that will help consumers view these products in the same vein as farming, hybrids, and the natural order, rather than as frankenfoods, the study concluded. In the category of, quote, words to use, Rapaille suggested terms such as beauty, bounty, children, choices, crossbreeding, diversity, earth, farmer, flowers, fruits, future generations, hard work, heritage, improved, organic, purity, quality, soil, tradition, and wholesome. Words to lose included biotechnology, chemical, DNA, economic, experiments, industry, laboratory, machines, manipulate, money, pesticides, profit, radiation, safety, and scientists. In a memo accompanying the completed study, IFIC's Libby Mikesell and Tom Stenzel summarized the lessons learned. Quote, the technology in biotechnology has scary overtones in connection with life in any form. Biotechnology may not be the optimal term to use in our discussions, they wrote. Clotaire recommends that we sandwich the word genetic between other words that create an association with tradition and nature. Some possible terms he suggested were biogenetic gardening, natural genetics, or natural genetic gardening. He composed this sentence as an example of how to use the terms. Quote, new genetic discoveries allow us to be successful gardeners of the 21st century and to accomplish crossbreeding at a highly sophisticated level, fulfilling a vision of the gardeners of the 19th century. Close quote. It is worth noting that many of the terms in Rapail's list of words to lose are straightforward characterizations of the actual scientific process used in developing genetically engineered foods. While many of the, quote, words to use are vague, pleasant-sounding euphemisms designed to obscure the details about everything that is new and unique about the process. It is also worth noting the irony in IFIC's choice of someone like Rapail to help design its strategy for defending biotech foods. Whatever dangers biotechnology may or may not present to the public, it is undeniably an example of modern science in action. When talking among themselves, biotech's promoters frequently invoke the name of science, characterizing their opponents as irrational, fear-driven technophobes. We are all frustrated by the public's emotional response to scientific factual issues, stated the IFIC report. Yet Rapail's advice to the IFIC was not only calculated to evoke an emotional response and to avoid any mention of science, his very methodology for arriving at his analysis is at best a parody of the scientific method. You can read the full article and many others by visiting www.prwatch.org.
You did not choose it, but you'll have to use it. We'll get our Roundup Ready fingerprint in every pie you eat with a bit blatant. Be a bit more blatant. Tell a corporation's domination of your global be complete. Mr. Monsanto, Monster Mutanto. We're turning Satan into Santa. Everybody, cancer coming through now. We're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators, hell on earth creators, gene manipulators, biotech dictators. The future's gonna hate us. Food and health and hope.